Good afternoon. My name is Melinda, and I'll be your conference operator today. At this time, I would like to welcome everyone to the Demonstration Applicant Conference Call. All lines have been placed on mute to prevent any background noise. After the speaker's remarks, there will be a question-and-answer session. If you would like to ask a question during this time, simply press star, then the number one on your telephone keypad. If you'd like to withdraw your question, please press the pound key. Thank you, Lynn Riley. You may begin your conference.
Greetings, everyone. I'm Lynn Riley, Division Director in the Center for Medicare and Medicaid Innovations, Medicare Demonstration Group. On behalf of our Center Director, Dr. Richard Gilfillan, and our Group Director, Ms. Linda Magno, I would like to welcome you to our Federally Qualified Health Center Advanced Primary Care Practice Demonstration Applicant Conference Call. We are excited about the demonstration and working with the FQHC community as well as our partners to make the demonstration a success. The purpose of today's call is to do several things. First, provide a background about the design of the FQHC demonstration. Second, identify our key partners and their roles in the demonstration. Third, provide demonstration expectations. Fourth, describe the application process. Fifth, describe how CMS will monitor participant progress. And sixth, describe elements of the demonstration evaluation. I have a few logistical tidbits about today's call. We expect there will be questions as we go along. However, we ask you to hold them until the question and answer portion of the call. In addition, we will not be addressing individual FQHC site-specific questions or issues, as addressing those concerns is time-consuming and better addressed individually. Instead, we ask that you send individual FQHC-specific concerns or questions to our demonstration mailbox at FQHC_MH_demo at cms.hhs.gov. We will introduce each speaker at the beginning of their presentation and announce the slide number that we are speaking about. We thank you for participation in today's call, and we will now begin our presentation with slide number two. CMS's mission. We want to be a major force and a reputable partner for the continual improvement of health and health care for all Americans. If you've ever heard our CMS Administrator, Dr. Don Berwick, present before, you've heard him mention the triple aim: better health for population, better care for individuals, and lower costs through improvement. The triple aim is the basis for our CMS mission. Slide number two. We have our Innovation Center mission. We're a trustworthy partner to identify, validate, and diffuse new models of care and payment that improve health and health care and reduce the total cost of care. The FQHC demonstration falls under the Innovation Center Authority and is one of the first Innovation Center demonstrations implemented to support its mission. You will see more information about the Innovation Center on the Innovation Center website, which you can access through our CMS website. So we're really excited about this, and we look forward to, again, your participation. We have two main objectives for the demonstration on slide number four: to evaluate the impact of the advanced primary care model, commonly known as the patient-centered medical home, on improving health, improving care, and reducing health care costs among Medicare beneficiaries served by FQHCs. And then we have another objective to assess the impact that additional support, which we believe will help the FQHCs transform their practice and help them become formally recognized by the National Committee for Quality Assurance, NCQA, as a Level 3 primary care medical home. The support that we're talking about are quarterly care management fees and technical assistance. CMS strongly believes that the medical home practice transformation is one way to achieve better care for individuals. On slide number five, we talk about the goals for the demonstration. Our first goal: achieve better health, better care, and lower costs for beneficiaries receiving care from FQHCs. You'll notice that our demonstration goals support the triple aim. As you can see, there's a repeating theme to the demonstration messages related to better health, better care, and lower costs, and we believe that this demonstration definitely falls within those messages, so you'll hear them over and over. Another goal that we have is to have 90% of participating FQHCs achieve level 3 NCQA recognition by the end of the demonstration. That's no short feat. We know that it's going to take a lot of work, but we are definitely here to help you, and we'll talk about that as we get further along in the presentation. On slide number 6, the patient-centered medical home model, we talk about the medical home and what the medical home does: provide patients with coordinated health care delivery, promote the development of strong physician-patient relationships, encourage communication, and incorporate electronic tracking systems to monitor health outcomes. The patient-centered medical home model is not necessarily a new model. However, it is a model of care that has risen to be a gold standard for providing team-based coordinated care. So, therefore, one of the things that we will certainly encourage is, again, strong team-based care, coordination, and all members of the healthcare team working together to improve care for the patient that comes into the FQHC. We invite you to visit the demonstration recruitment website at www.fqhcmedicalhome.com for more information about the medical home model. At this time, I'm going to turn it over to Dr. Matthew Burke for slide number 7. Dr. Burke is a senior clinical consultant in the Office of Quality and Data, Bureau of Primary Health Care in the Health Resources Services Administration. Matt?
Thanks very much, Lynn. I appreciate it. And welcome, everyone, to the call. I can't express how enthusiastic we are at the Bureau of Primary Health Care that CMS has taken this opportunity to launch a patient-centered medical home demonstration in the health center. This is a great opportunity to be at the forefront of some really innovative reform that is very focused on quality improvement and is very patient-centric, and could theoretically really, in a positive way, change how we practice, which will be wonderful for providers and patients alike. There is the strong expectation that we are going to stay involved with this demonstration and help CMS wherever possible for where we're about to go next. This is something that is, as Lynn had mentioned, a really strong element within the Department of Health and Human Services, that is the patient-centered medical home, for its capacity to transform care in a meaningful and really positive way. Therefore, we have full philosophical support for what's going on here and look forward to working with CMS and the health centers going forward. Participating health centers will be supported in the entire application process, and we will get into some logistics in a few minutes, but there is both financial and support and support in terms of technical assistance, as well as logistical support for the health centers. And while we would encourage health centers to go directly to the aforementioned web link for direct information about this demonstration, we are also working very hard internally to make sure that our geographic division directors and project officers are very aware of this process, so that calls or questions or information that's needed from the perspective of the Bureau of Primary Health Care will be very readily available to those of you out there in the landscape initiating and going through this process. Furthermore, we look forward to working with our CMS colleagues longitudinally and making sure that we're maximizing your chance for success into going into this demonstration to make it as easy as possible, as logistically streamlined as possible, and to ensure that you achieve the maximum amount of success under the demonstration as you would hope. So we're really excited about this, and at this point, I would like to turn it back over to James Cohn, who is the project officer of the FQHC Advanced Primary Care Practice Demonstration. And like Lynn, he is also with the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services. Jim?
Thank you, Matt. And again, welcome everyone. We appreciate very much the help and the cooperation that we've been getting from the HRSA folks. Their guidance, their insights, and their experience has lent an awful lot to us being able to provide what we think is a pretty well-designed demonstration, and help us provide for the logistics. In addition to the HRSA support, we also are in partnership with the National Association of Community Health Centers, as depicted on slide 8. NAC is a terrific partner for us. I know all of you are very, very familiar with who they are and what they do, and we appreciate their dedication to providing care to the most underserved populations and the fact that they provide advocacy and training on behalf of FQHCs and their patients. The partnership that we have with NAC and with HRSA, combined with the resources at CMS and our Innovation Center, is going to enable us to be able to work through this demonstration in an effective and efficient way, and also be able to address many of the needs of all of our organizations combined. I'm going to go switch gears now to slide number 9. I think it's important that we address right up front some of the expectations of this demonstration and those that choose to participate in it. It's very important in managing expectations that people understand what exactly CMS is expecting. One of the first things we are expecting out of this demonstration is that it will result in change. Change has to occur. At the end of the demonstration, we don't expect to have business as usual type practices, but those that are participating have indeed developed capacity and transformed their practice culture to a more coordinated and less fragmented style of delivering primary health care. We expect participants will achieve level 3 NCQA recognition. We realize that we've presented that this as a goal of 90%, and that's still a heck of a lot of FQHCs achieving, but we believe that level 3 is a very reachable goal. It can be achieved, and we expect our participating FQHCs are going to work towards that. Another expectation is that the participants will remain in the demonstration. We learn nothing if the practices drop out. We lose a lot of the strength of the findings that we might get, and I want to make sure that everyone understands and thinks about this before they decide to apply, to make sure that they are comfortable with accepting this responsibility. We expect our participating FQHCs to cooperate with the evaluation contractor. The results of this demonstration are intended to inform future decisions, and we expect our participants will be prepared to provide additional data if necessary for purposes of evaluation. We will not make this particularly onerous or burdensome, but there will probably be the need to collect additional data from time to time from participants. Now I'm going to go to some background on slide 10. These are basic parts of the demonstration that I'll run through. Duration, size, and scope. This is intended to be a 3-year demonstration project, which will begin when the demonstration begins, actually September 1st, 2011, and it will run for 3 years following that. The next 2 points are fairly self-explanatory. We're looking to target up to 500 FQHCs from across the country and up to 195 Medicare fee-for-service beneficiaries, including dual eligibles, will probably participate in the demonstration. On slide 11, eligibility. The first point must be an individual physical location. This has been the cause of some confusion based on questions we've received at our mailbox. And basically what we're saying here is one application for one site. We cannot accept applications on a group level from a grantee who is sponsoring several other satellite locations. FQHCs, by definition at CMS, are individual brick and mortar locations. They each have an individual number which identifies them and separates them from a group practice. That is not to say that groups of community health centers that have several FQHCs cannot participate. They just simply have to submit an application for each individual site. The FQHC is going to have to be providing medical services to at least 200 fee-for-service Medicare beneficiaries in a 12-month period, which we call a look-back period, which we've recently done. Those that we identified as having 200 or more, as I should say, serving 200 or more Medicare beneficiaries within the last 12 months or previous 12-month period, were selected and sent an invitation letter to participate in the demonstration. That's one of several pieces of criteria, but it's a key critical first criteria for determining a cutoff. This provides us with a baseline for participation. Everybody, all the practices will start out with a minimum number or a minimum level of beneficiary involvement. The FQHC must be a physician or nurse practitioner-led practice. By this, we mean that the clinical direction and decisions will be coming from one of those two clinicians and not from another source, which might not be a medical entity or perhaps a physician assistant. At the present time, recognition can be achieved only for practices that are directed by a physician or a nurse practitioner. The FQHC must be providing primary care services as opposed to only specialty services such as dental or vision. This demo is about primary care. It's not about specialty services. It doesn't mean that we discredit any practice that might be providing dental or vision care to a needy population. But for the purposes of this demonstration, which is a research project, we're looking at the primary care element of their patient population. FQHCs must provide medical care to a general population and not exclusively to specific populations such as migrant workers or the homeless. We recognize that there are migrant clinics that sometimes operate on a seasonal level. This would not be appropriate for this kind of a demonstration. And we recognize that it can be difficult for a practice to follow a homeless population for the sake of care coordination. Again, this does not mean that we're not sensitive to the needs of these individuals, but for the purpose of this demonstration, it would not be an appropriate setting for us to measure effectively. Now, on slide 12, continuing with eligibility, the FQHCs are going to have to be able to receive electronic funds transfer. We will not be issuing physical checks or paper checks. So the EFT is necessary because that's how we're going to pay. And they must be submitting their claims to one of two payment contractors, National Government Services or Noridian Administrative Services. These two paying contractors represent approximately 97% of all claims that are processed from FQHCs. This is logistically desirable for the demonstration so as not to have to do extraordinary contracting work for a very, very small number of FQHCs that are not submitting their claims to those two payment contractors. On slide 13, I'll talk a little bit about beneficiary eligibility. Who are the beneficiaries that that you must have seen at least 200 of in a previous 12-month period? They will be enrolled in Medicare Part A and Part B, having both Part A and Part B, fee-for-service, during the most period, the most current period that we've looked back. They will not be currently in hospice care, and they will not be currently under treatment for end-stage renal disease. Beneficiaries would include those that are both Medicare and Medicaid duly eligible, and they must not be in a Medicare Advantage plan. Medicare Advantage plans do not give us the data that we need in order to measure effectively. These are elements of how the patient panel will be comprised. Now I'm going to turn it over to Claudia Lamb, who is a project officer for our payment contracts here at CMS in the Innovation Center, and she'll talk about beneficiary attribution. Claudia?
Thanks, Jim. We're now on slide 14. I'm going to give you a little bit of an overview on how beneficiaries are attributed to an FQHC. We will be looking at Medicare administrative claims processed by the two payment contractors, NGS and Noridian, and a beneficiary who's been seen most at one FQHC will be attributed to that FQHC. So if there are two FQHCs who have seen the same beneficiary the same number of times, we have a tiebreaker, which is the FQHC who has seen that beneficiary most recently. So that would make up your initial beneficiary population upon whom you will be paid. At the time of payment, you will get a roster which will enumerate those patients, among other things, and that payment is made quarterly. At the time that we run that attribution, we will also, of course, be checking beneficiary eligibility so that, for example, if they've gone to Medicare Advantage or have died, of course, we wouldn't be processing a payment on behalf of those beneficiaries. At the time you get paid, you'll get the roster and the quarterly payment, as Jim mentioned, by EFT through our two payment contractors. We have determined that we are not going to entertain challenges to the rosters that you get. This is not meant to be like a per-head PM payment, but more an approximation of payment for the share of beneficiaries that you see. We call it a care management fee for that reason rather than a PMPM. And it's a proxy for the patients that we, by virtue of administrative claims data, perceive to be in your panel. We expect you to see all Medicare fee-for-service beneficiaries that appear and not, as you would in managed care, not see a patient who's not on a list. A little bit about the payment. There are going to be quarterly payments through the EFT process, $6 per month, which would be $18 per quarter. And that fee is above the other fees that you are paid by Medicare for the all-inclusive payment. Every quarter we will do a look back of a year's worth of claims data, which will be a rolling period. For example, we will drop the oldest 3 months of claims. We will add the newest 3 months of claims. So we're always looking at a year, but it's a rolling year every quarter. Again, the fee is automatically paid. No claim needs to be submitted, and it will automatically be paid based on the roster and the attribution for that quarter. We will also not be making adjustments to these fees. For example, if a patient died in month one of the previous quarter, we will not deduct those 2 months of fees for which you provided no care. On the other hand, if someone would have been eligible for your practice in month one of the previous quarter, you won't get paid until they hit the roster this quarter. So we think that those payments will kind of be a wash, and it won't hit you financially in any way because one kind of offsets the other. The roster that you will receive will enumerate the patients for whom you were attributed that quarter by name, HIC number, and date of birth, I believe. And then there will be some aggregate information at the bottom of that roster that will indicate how many patients you were paid for that quarter, how many patients that you lost in that quarter just by number, and how many patients you gained newly in that quarter. So that's a basic general overview of how the payments will work. And now I'd like to turn it back to Matt Burke from HRSA, and he's going to talk a little bit about the benefits of participating in the demonstration.
Thank you, Claudia, and hello again, everyone. We are now on slide 16, and I wanted to talk for a minute or two about the benefits of becoming a patient-centered medical home. The first slide here, number 16, is sort of the really high order and philosophical ideas about why the patient-centered medical home matters. Certainly, as Jim said, that this whole demonstration, in addition to sort of changing practice behavior, is a real cultural change. It's moving the ball forward in terms of the quality of care that we deliver for patients and how we actually deliver, you know, modern healthcare. And the first thing that it does is it re-entrenches the concept of quality outcomes and very patient-centric care. The patient-centered medical home is a model that's really designed around the chronic care model that emphasizes, you know, easy access for patients and longitudinal tracking of coordinated measures, which is the second bullet there. The ability to take complex patients with complex needs and not just treat them retroactively for in a fee-for-service environment is really what you're looking at. The ability to develop a cultural model of clinical care delivery that follows patients over time, gives them the preventative care that they need, does it in a very culturally competent, patient-sensitive way, is really a major benefit here. And this is one of those areas where we all strongly believe that health centers for the last 45 years have been outstanding leaders in this department in terms of reducing disparities and meeting the social safety net needs. They have just been absolute leaders in this area. And finally, under health reform, here is an opportunity to go ahead and think about this even more aggressively and raise the bar even further with this. And this demonstration is a really wonderful way to get started in thinking about that. The third bullet, improving patient and provider satisfaction, is very important. And certainly the patient piece is wrapped up in these other bullets. But I want to emphasize that this is not something that is designed to be a burden that is onerous on the folks that are actually delivering care. For while certainly we recognize that it can be a big lift to make these transformations to this new culture of care delivery, one of the major pillars, the absolute, you know, fundamental tenets of the medical home, is that providers are happier as well, that there is a change in workflow, there is a change in delivery, there's an opportunity to do more for the communities that you love and the communities that you serve to push their outcomes farther up the hill. And that's something that is supposed to be, when done well, very much something that is provider-centric as well and allows them to be happy and focused and just really engaged with the kind of work that they do out there in the primary care world, which is really a fantastic thing. As part of that, you will certainly have the opportunity to become a clinical and a teaching leader in the federally qualified health center environment. So those of you that are on the forefront of transformational change are going to be looked to sort of as shining stars, and someone who makes the transition successfully will certainly be someone that other groups look to later on to say, how did they do that? How were they met with that success? What can I learn from their best practice and their new model? So one of the benefits certainly of this demonstration is to position yourself to be in a situation like that. And then an effective and efficient deliverer of care, which means everything from safer care to more cost-efficient care in this environment, the three aims, the patient, the reduced per capita cost, the improved patient outcomes, and the improved population health are all sort of fall under that fifth bullet there, which speaks kind of more towards efficiency. So that is all part of it. If you move on to slide 17, in addition to some of those larger things that are really important and really fundamental for how we'd like to move the landscape at this point, there are also the more tangible benefits, of course, of being part of the demonstration. And the first one is the financial support. There is financial support both for the survey process through NCQA, which I believe will be discussed shortly, but there is also the financial support that Claudia just mentioned in terms of the per patient per month fees, recognizing that there will be additional staff or workflow changes or things that need to happen that can't just happen in a vacuum. So CMS has very carefully and thoughtfully designed this demonstration to have financial support elements directly as part of it as well. There is certainly technical assistance, which comes in the form of the contractor who's providing the survey recognition tool. There is support for health centers going through this demonstration with respect to showing them how this tool works, how to fill it out, how to complete it. It's not just throwing you a survey and a large amount of work to do and saying, please move forward with this. There is direct support in allowing you to understand how that process works to maximize your application success. And further, we also recognize that there is an opportunity farther down the road that certain health centers may appreciate additional support in terms of the transformational piece, in saying that there is an area of patient-centered medical home qualifications that is particularly challenging or is particularly big change for us, and we would like some support in thinking about how we go ahead and harness lessons learned from people that have already gone through this. And the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services and the Bureau of Primary Health Care and HRSA are currently actively thinking about this and how to provide that kind of technical assistance. Something that is maybe less of a direct tangible benefit, but is certainly an indirect benefit to the entire health center world, is that the findings through the evaluation component here in this demonstration will definitely lead to best practice information, potentially portals and other access points for information for others that come after that could learn off of what you do as leaders and how they can leverage the lessons learned from your experience in the demonstration for them to become patient-centered medical homes in the future as well. And certainly that will help pave the way for all federally qualified health centers as we move forward, because patient-centered medical home is, again, is certainly the wave of the future and is well embraced, and I think it has some real, real dividends here that are going to pay off for everyone. So with that, as we turn to slide 18, I would like to introduce Mihail Senatharaja, who is the project director for the FQHC Advanced Primary Care Practice Demonstration. He's the director for performance measurement at Thomson Reuters. And without further ado, I will turn it over to him.
Great. Thank you very much, Matt. As Matt mentioned, I am with Thomson Reuters. Thomson Reuters is the contractor hired by CMS to assist with the implementation of the demonstration. And Thomson Reuters is working with the NCQA and specifically Bill Tulloch, director of government relations initiatives, will also be available during the question and answer period to respond to any inquiries. Both of our organizations are really delighted to be involved with this demonstration, which we think can make a big difference to the population served by FQHCs. And thank you, everyone, for being on this call today. Over the next few slides, I'll talk a little bit more about the nuts and bolts of the application process. So starting on slide 18, applications are being accepted from June 6th to August 12th of this year. So the application process is open. You can go after this this call and start applying. We already have several applications in. As Jim mentioned, there's one application per site. And so if you have any questions about that, please do email the CMS website. There's a list of websites and email addresses on the second last slide that we'll be going over. So if you have any questions about your individual FQHCs and how to apply by site, please refer any questions to that email address. Moving to slide 19, at a high level, there's really two parts to the application process: the application form and completion of the NCQA readiness assessment survey. So the NCQA's definition and qualification for medical home is really forming the foundation of an assessment of progress towards medical home status. Both of these, both the application form and the readiness assessment survey, must be completed in order to consider your application. Moving to slide 20, which discusses the application form itself, the form really serves several purposes. One, it confirms the FQHC's agreement with the terms and conditions of the demonstration, some of which we've previously discussed. It collects the information that CMS needs to qualify and select FQHCs. Third, it creates an account on the NCQA's PCMH web-based system. And so really, the NCQA's system we're leveraging for this demonstration, so you will get an account with no cost on the NCQA's PCMH web system. And finally, it collects practice information for evaluation purposes. The form itself can be accessed at the FQHCmedicalhome.com website. And just to note, there are instructions for the completion of the application form, and so please do access those if you're going to the website. And we should have a video up on that website as well within the week that will carry you through the application. As has been mentioned before, there is lots of assistance with both the application and the survey, and so please do, if you have any questions, avail yourself of that assistance. On slide 21, to discuss the readiness assessment briefly. It's the second step of the application process. It really leverages the survey that the NCQA uses to assess medical home recognition. And so in this case, for the application, it's really to set a baseline to assess the FQHC's readiness to become a medical home. And so the survey, and there's information on this about this on the website, needs to be completed, but the formal recognition process actually requires submission of documentation. That is not required for this application process. So completion of the survey is required, but the submission of formal documentation is not. And that will be clarified as you go to the survey website. On slide 24, or sorry, 22, after you submit the application form, which is step one, you will receive immediately an email confirmation that your application has been received. You will get a second email within 2 business days that provides access to the readiness assessment survey. So please do look for that email within 2 days. If you do not get it, please do follow up at the email addresses you'll see on the second last slide. The survey itself, the readiness assessment survey, follows the NCQA's PCMH's 2011 standards and guidelines. If you want to see what those standards and guidelines require, they are available at no cost at the link on slide 22. So those guidelines will show you what how becoming a medical home is assessed and judged. On slide 23, again, only FQHCs that complete both the application form and the readiness assessment by August 12th will be considered. There will be a selection process to ensure, for evaluation purposes, that we have a good representation of FQHCs within the demo. And so certain characteristics may be used to make that selection, like geography. And finally, all applicants will be notified of their acceptance into the demonstration by August 26th. On slide 24, as I mentioned, there is lots of assistance available to complete the application itself and the survey as well, and that information will be provided on the application form and survey through links and is, again, on the second last slide of this presentation. So with that, let me turn it back over to Lynn Riley, Director at the Innovation Center.
Thanks, Mihal. We're on slide 25. We're talking about technical assistance related to practice transformation. And we've mentioned practice transformation several times throughout the presentation, and you're probably wondering how we expect you to get there. We're looking at technical assistance to be delivered in several ways. Currently, we are developing, as Mihal mentioned, technical assistance to look at and help you with practice transformation, such as continuity of care, effective use of care teams, and care across transitions. And those are some of the topic items that would be included in the technical assistance moving towards practice transformation. We are aiming to provide support through the primary care associations or possibly through grantee support. We're also looking at a central learning curriculum and, as I mentioned, some kind of peer-to-peer learning. In addition, on slide 26, Some of the delivery for the technical assistance could be through monthly web-based training sessions on the primary care medical standards and recognition process. It could include mock surveys on a limited basis. It could include individual consultations on a limited basis. And it could include transformation learning systems in a web environment. As Mihil mentioned, we are working to finalize the details of our technical assistance plans, and we will share those details with you all at a later date. Moving on to slide number 27, I'd like to introduce Dr. Rachel Henke, who is a senior research leader with Thomson Reuters, and she will talk to you about monitoring activities. Rachel?
Thank you, Lynn. As Lynn mentioned, I'll be going through a series of slides about monitoring activities as pertaining to this demonstration. CMS will monitor the progress of participating XUHCs toward NCQA Level 3 PCMH recognition. These monitoring activities will include three parts. First, there'll be readiness assessment survey updates. There'll be corresponding random audits. And then finally, SQHC's participants will receive feedback from CMS. In the next three slides, I will review each of these in turn. Now, slide 28. As already mentioned, SQHCs will be required to complete a readiness assessment as part of the application process. Participants will be required to update their responses to this readiness assessment survey every 6 months throughout the demonstration. SQHC participants will be reminded as this six-month deadline approaches that they will need to do this. And CMS will use this readiness survey data to ensure SQHC participants are progressing toward PCMH Level 3 recognition. They will also use these results to target technical assistance resources for the demonstration. Now, slide 29. To ensure the accuracy of the readiness assessment survey responses at each 6 month interval after the updates are provided, 10% of FQHC participants will be randomly selected for audit. These audits will not be conducted on site, rather over the phone, and they will be conducted in a way that minimizes the burden on the FQHC. Basically, the audit will consist of NCQA requesting documentation to substantiate the presence of core PCMH capabilities reported by the FQHC in the readiness assessment. Now, slide 30. The final monitoring activity is feedback from CMS. CMS will provide participating FQHCs with feedback reports, which contain information including that FQHC's change in survey scores over time. The demonstration continues. It will contain FQHC survey scores as compared to other FQHC participants. And finally, it will provide claims-based cost and utilization data on Medicare beneficiaries attributed to that practice. And now to talk about the evaluation of the demonstration, I will turn it over to Suzanne Goodwin, Project Officer, Demonstration Rapid Cycle, the Evaluation Group of the Center for Medicare and Medicaid Innovation.
Thanks, Rachel. So CMS will be conducting an independent evaluation of the demonstration. The purpose of the evaluation is twofold. First, it will assess whether we'll study the process and challenges involved in transforming FQHCs into advanced primary care practices, and it also will assess the effects of the advanced primary care model on access, quality, and cost of care provided to Medicare beneficiaries served by FQHCs, as well as Medicaid beneficiaries to the extent possible. In terms of the FQHC's expectations in participating in data collection associated with the evaluation, we expect that selected FQHCs will participate in data collection activities that are to be used for evaluation purposes. At minimum, FQHCs will be expected to complete the PCMH readiness assessment every 6 months. In addition, FQHCs may be asked to either complete surveys or facilitate the completion of, for instance, patient experience surveys, perhaps putting us in touch with some of the patients. In addition, a subset of FQHCs may be asked to participate in site visits, focus groups, and interviews periodically. And I will turn it back over to Jim Cohen for concluding remarks.
Thank you, Suzanne. On slide 33, I'd like to touch on some important information regarding contacts. There is information on this slide that I think will be important to you as time goes on. The first one I want to point out, it has to do with demonstration, description, and application. Anything you want to know about the application process is contained on this website, which is listed as www.fqhcmedicalhome.com. This is also where you would begin to access the application, and ultimately following that, the readiness assessment and so on. We want to direct you also to the NCQA homepage for the demonstration. We have to make a correction here. The actual address is www.ncqa.org/GRI. This is the place that you would go for information relative to the NCQA portion of the application, which is the readiness assessment primarily, and also other questions relative, if they're relative to completing the application itself. For design questions about the demonstration, we direct you to our mailbox, our demonstration mailbox, at fqhc_mh_demo@cms.hhs.gov. If there are specific questions relative to your individual site, if you need clarification about some part of what we discussed today, or if you are in the process of applying and something pops up that you don't quite understand, you'd like to get guidance on, this is the way to get your answer quickly and accurately. The application form and survey assistance can be found at pcmh-grip@ncqa.org. And process questions that have to do with the application, again, at our demonstration at the Thompson website, fqhcmedicalhome@thompson.com. Those are the mailboxes to receive questions relative to those areas. And on the final slide, we will be periodically posting demonstration updates on the CMS and on the Center for Medicare and Medicaid Innovations websites. This presentation is being recorded and will be made available shortly on that site as an MP3 for you to listen to if you choose to go back and listen and hear the conversation. And when we get to questions in just a few moments, of course, they will be recorded as well. You might find this useful for future reference if you needed to go back. And all updates relative to the demonstration, as they become available for us, will be posted on the CMS website, the address that is here and way too long to read. Or you can find it at the Innovation website, which is much easier, http://innovations.gov. I'll ask Melinda if we can begin with the questions.
At this time, I'd like to remind everyone, in order to ask a question, please press star, then the number one on your telephone keypad. We'll pause for a moment to compile the Q&A roster.
Thank you.
Your first question comes from the line of Joe Santini. Your line is now open.
One of the questions that we'd like to ask is, we were recently accredited through the Accreditation Association of Ambulatory Healthcare, AAAHC, for both their accreditation and the medical home certification. How does that play into this or this process?
Okay, that's a very good question. Now, With respect to AAAHC, we respect the standards and the compliance with those standards. This is a research project, and as a demonstration, we had to kind of make a choice. Since we can't assume that all standards are identical or necessarily comparable for all involved. I think that having accreditation under AAAHC will be a tremendous advantage to you, but we are going to ask you to, if you participate, you are going to have to receive recognition under the 2011 standards from NCQA by the end of the demonstration period. It wasn't actually mentioned during the conversation, but as an FQHC, you won't have any costs associated with the submission for recognition, which is the survey itself plus the documentation usually has a cost associated with it, so there won't be any additional cost for you to do this, and you probably have an awful lot of the capabilities already documented and things in place that might help you achieve Level 3 recognition before the end of the demonstration.
Okay,
we have one more question.
I'm sorry, can I also?
Go ahead.
Oh, thanks. This is Matt from the Bureau of Primary Healthcare. We are, at this point, pretty agnostic about the standards between the patient-centered medical home, so it's fabulous that you have the recognition and the accreditation also under another entity. I think Jim said it very well, that will probably position you to be well endowed just to have the opportunity to do well sort of in this demonstration. They end up being sort of, as far as we can tell right now, separate processes, but mutually reinforcing. So given that this demo is cost-free to the health centers and those structures are already well supported between HRSA and CMS, it probably just gives you sort of some technical expertise and some understanding that would allow you to move very nicely forward with this project. But as Jim said, you would still have to be go through all the rigor of the NCQA process in its own right. But we definitely, I think, from the Bureau standpoint, encourage any and all of these so that multiple recognitions or recognition and accreditation at the same time serve to mutually reinforce quality improvement and care delivery. And so we are very, very proud of what you've done and would encourage you to continue and to perhaps do more, particularly given that the demonstration is supported at this point.
Thank you. We have one additional question.
Within regards to the 200 eligible Medicare beneficiaries in the last 12 months, is that by location or is that as an organization?
That pertains to the individual FQHC site, the brick-and-mortar site. If you have more than one site, it would have to be, each would have to have a minimum, have served a minimum of 200 eligible Medicare beneficiaries in that period of time.
Okay, so I just want to repeat this back to you. So if I have five locations and only one of them meet the 200 members, then only one would be able to participate, correct?
That's correct.
Okay, thank you.
Hey, our next question comes from the line of Paul Smallwood. Your line is now open.
Hi, this is Pam Smallwood. We are an FQHC in Kentucky, and we currently participate with NGS. That's where we submit our claims, but CMS is transitioning us to Cigna as of October the 17th. Will we still be eligible to participate in the demonstration project?
No, I don't think you will. I'm sorry. We have to re-verify eligibility of beneficiaries on a quarterly basis. If your claims are going to be submitted to a different payment source, we won't be able to track those claims.
Is there any way we can petition CMS to allow us to sit at NGS instead of switching to Cigna?
I'm not aware of any process to do that. That's part of the Medicare administrative contractor work, and we don't participate in that. I'm sorry, okay. We can't be more helpful.
And this is Lynn Riley. I'd like to reiterate that we're not able to address any specific FQHC site questions or issues. They really need to go to our mailbox. because we need to research them in order to best serve you. So we would appreciate your questions being directed more to the demonstration and the application requirements and the items that we talked about today. So thank you.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
Okay, your next question comes from the line of Gail Speedy. Your line is now open.
I guess I'm looking for clarification. If you are participating in a Medicaid PCMH program, are you also eligible to participate in the Medicare program, or is that sort of double jeopardy?
If you're talking about the state option program in Medicaid, is that what you're referring to?
Yes.
There should not be any controversy there. That's a very different type of a demonstration project, so I don't think you'll have any issues with that and participating in this one. And for clarification for the group at large, the key element there in terms of which demos you can participate in and which ones you cannot really lie in the fact that you cannot be paid for providing services to a patient twice. So if there's any indication or any possibility that you would be getting reimbursed for care through two different processes, then you would not be eligible to participate and should not indeed be participating. But that should not be an issue with the state option program.
Okay, and then one other question. If you do have a 2008 application out there but you have not had the survey yet, you can convert, because this is based on 2011 PCMH standards, you can convert to a 2011 application, correct? Or do you have TA to help with that?
This is Bill Tulloch from NCQA. We can issue you, and we will issue if you participate in the demonstration project, a new 2011 survey tool, and we will certainly provide any assistance we can in helping you translate your 2008 responses to 2011. Unfortunately, because the change between 2008 and 2011 was relatively significant, there isn't sort of an automatic update process, but we can certainly work with you individually if we need to.
Okay, that's great. What was your email again?
It's actually on slide 33, PCMH.
Thank you.
Okay, next question comes from the line of George Ward. Your line is now open.
Good afternoon. I think my question may have been answered, but I just want to triple-check it one last time. We have a couple of satellite sites where Medicare patients are being seen at. I thought I heard someone say earlier that this is strictly for, what was the term, brick-and-mortar FQHCs, meaning that it's only for the main clinic site that we need to be doing this for?
Not exactly. What we're talking about is an individual site. If you have more than one FQHC in your organization, they're considered individually to be brick and mortar themselves, not just the main site. The main site is also brick and mortar. If you have multiple sites that you want to participate and they meet all of the necessary eligibility requirements, they must submit an application individually. You cannot submit an application for more than one site.
Got it. Clear as mud. Thank you.
Your next question comes from the line of Kevin Finder. Your line is now open.
I think our question has been answered. We are currently recognized as Level 3 NCQA, but what I understand is we would still have to go through the process as if we were not. Is that correct?
That is correct. If you're currently recognized, I have to presume that it's 2008 standards.
That is correct.
And if you were recognized within the last 3 years, you're probably due for renewal anyway.
We were recognized in February.
Oh, in February, okay. We're still going to ask you to continue to submit the readiness assessments on a six-month basis, even though you're a current recognized program. and we're going to ask you to submit documentation for 2011 recognition by the end of the demonstration.
Okay, thank you.
And your next question comes from the line of Kathy Coleman. Your line is now open.
Hi, thank you. This sounds like a very collaborative project. I had a question about the patient and the provider satisfaction surveys. Have they been developed yet, and who will be providing them, and the frequency of these tools? Thank you.
We have not decided what our data collection efforts will be. We're in the process now of identifying them, so we don't know what surveys will be administered. The provider and patient satisfaction surveys were just examples of possible data collection that we'll be doing, and because we don't know exactly which data collection yet, we don't know what tools we may be using, but the information will be shared with the participating sites as soon as we make those determinations.
Your next question comes from the line of Matt Stanisduski. Your line is now open.
Stanis has to be close enough, but thank you very much for putting this call together. Just a quick question. Are FQHC lookalikes eligible for this program?
Yes.
Okay, good. That's all I needed. Thank you very much.
Our next question comes from the line of Marty Lynch. Your line is now open.
Sure. Thanks for putting the program together. I wanted to ask two questions. Number one is simply this, $6 PMPM, or $6 care management fee, whatever one calls it, is good. Help with the certification process is good. But I really felt like a share of savings is the type of incentive that would get health centers to participate strongly and would be fair look at how we're doing in terms of overall cost of patient care in the Medicare program. We think we make a difference. We'd like to understand that data and see that and see some benefit from it. So I wanted to ask if any thought was given or will be given down the road as the demonstration moves forward to that type of reimbursement. And then I have a very simple question after that, but let's do the first one.
To your first question, we looked at all available models for this demonstration, and we decided not to use shared savings. Shared savings is, as you probably know, a little bit difficult in these circumstances to really validate. It's good, and particularly in the population we're talking about. So without going into a whole lot of detail, yes, we did give it consideration, and we have noted your point, your comment, and we'll consider that down the road, but at this point in time, we don't have any plans to change the design.
Thank you for consideration. The second real brief question is simply, does size matter in this demonstration? In other words, if we have sites with a large number of Medicare participants versus sites that just make the 200, is it likely that the smaller or the larger would get any special consideration as you make your selection decisions?
No, size won't have any bearing on consideration for participating. What we're looking for is as good a balance as we can get among large, small, and medium-sized practices, along with certain other characteristics. It's not that we're trying to restrict, but we're trying to have a good distribution of different size clinics so that we can more generalize the results that we're finding.
Great. Thank you.
Okay, next question comes from the line of Bethany Gadzinski. Your line is now open.
Thank you. You did answer my first question, so I will ask the second question, and you might not be able to answer it. But what was the pool or the number of application letters that you sent out? So how many people are vying for the 500 spots that you're looking at?
It's approximately, I'm going to say, 1,340, give or take.
Thank you.
I don't have an exact number, but it is very close to that.
Great. Thanks.
And next question comes from the line of Deborah Workman. Your line is now open.
Thank you. We received letters for some of our sites that we believe are eligible, but not all of our sites, invitation to apply letters. And I'm wondering if we need to be invited for each site or whether we can just go ahead and apply if we think we're eligible.
What we tried to do as best we could is identify the sites that met the initial eligibility criteria of 200 or more Medicare beneficiaries in a 12-month period, and a couple of other things, such as being able to receive electronic funds transfers and things of that nature. We specifically invited those because we could verify those eligible FQHCs. If you did not receive a letter for all of your sites, it could mean that the other sites did not meet one or more of the eligibility criteria for being invited to participate in the demonstration.
So would I possibly follow up by emailing that email address to find out whether it might still be appropriate to apply, or just limit our applications to the sites that we receive letters for?
If you would like, you can send an inquiry to our mailbox, fqhc_mh_demo@cms.hhs.gov, and we can look into it. I think your best bet is to stick with the sites that have been identified by invitation.
Okay, thank you.
Next question comes from the line of Al Flagger. Your line is now open.
Thank you. During the initial invitation letter, it indicated that our facility also needed to be enrolled with PECOS to be able to meet the criteria, yet it was not addressed during the conference here. Could you provide additional clarification as to whether PECOS has to be completed before we apply, or if we're actually in the enrollment status, and how that affects the consideration for the demonstration?
You're going to have to be enrolled in PECOS. PECOS is the means with which CMS is permitted to pay you. So if you're not in PECOS, you wouldn't be able to be paid for participating in the demonstration.
Okay, and if we are enrolled at the point in time that we submit the application, even with that process being underway right now, that should not have an issue on enrolling or being selected for the demonstration, I assume.
Actually, it will have a bearing. You're going to have to have recertified your PECOS information before you apply, because it will kick out when we do our checking on that. And if you don't currently have a PECOS file, then it we'll probably disqualify you because we can't find it. And we know that it's a lengthy process.
Okay.
If you want to explore this further, then please send us an email inquiry to that effect to our mailbox.
Okay. Thank you.
The next question comes from the line of David Shipby. Your line is now open.
I think you actually got the question earlier, which was relative to currently being NCQA recognized and the 2008 standards. So that one's there. But just one point of clarification. So the 500 participants you're looking for are 500 bricks and mortar sites, not 500 entities.
Yes, I think that's you could state it that way. Just for clarity, we understand that there are two different systems that are functioning. If we look at the community health centers in general, we have grantees and sites. And the grantee is the main organization under which there are several other sites. Some of those sites may be FQHCs. The way that we look at it is all FQHCs are CHCs, but not all CHCs are FQHCs. An FQHC must have an individual provider transaction account number in order to be an FQHC and deemed appropriate by CMS. So the brick and mortar actually attaches to that PTAN number that identifies you as an individual site. So when you're speaking of entities, I presume you're talking about some other satellite organization that is not necessarily clearly established as an individual unit so as to be called an FQHC.
No, it's really the FQHC entity, which is the, you know, the deemed organization, and you submit a change of scope or whatever you do to get different access points. So basically, I think what you're talking about are 500 individually recognized bricks and mortar sites that CMS directs payments to versus the organizational entity itself.
Yes. Okay. Now I understand. I'm sorry. You are correct.
Yeah. Okay. All right. That does it for me. Thanks.
Okay. Our next question comes from the line of Elizabeth Gillespie. Your line is now open.
Hi. This is Paul Kay from Hudson River Healthcare. You indicated before about the 2008 to 2011 standards change, so those of us who are recognized will go through that. What I wasn't clear about is if we have multiple sites, currently through NCQA there is a multi-site application process where much of the documentation is common among the sites and some of it is specific, and that's how NCQA recognizes us. Will we be able to use the same methodology, or will we have to submit documentation site by site and not use NCQA's multi-site process?
We are we're interested in the FQHC sites that are participating in the demonstration, and that might not be all of the sites that you're talking about in a multi-site recognition from NCQA. So I would say first, you would need to meet the requirements of the demonstration on an individual FQHC site basis. We have not actually discussed multi-site recognition with NCQA. We see it as an individual thing, but I'll ask Bill to weigh in on this.
Well, there's a sort of a technical side to this issue, and then there's the what does CMS want to do with the demonstration project. On a technical side, it's doable either way. So we can probably take that offline and have a discussion about it. But so technically it would be possible, but I think as we said, as Jim noted, CMS is interested in each individual site, and for the demonstration project, each site will have to have a survey tool and have that survey tool completed. So that will have to be on a site-by-site basis. But as we mentioned, documentation is not required for all those elements, and in fact would not be required until sometime as we was an audit where we would ask for documentation, and that would be from an individual site. So for the demonstration project, you are going to have a survey tool per site and have that completed per site, so there won't be the ability to use the multi-site there. For the formal recognition, that's another issue that we'll have to take offline.
Well, it would be a shame to have to, you know, do two sets of processes, so I hope you can harmonize that. I understand the intent of wanting each site to be recognized, but as you know, you can do that but still use the corporate tool to populate the elements in multiple sites. So I hope you can figure that out.
All right.
Thank you.
Next question comes from the line of Susan Wilson. Your line is now open.
Good afternoon, and thank you. I apologize for any noise. I'm in an airport. My question relates to the mention that primary care associations would be looked to be part of the training and technical assistance activities. Could you expand on that?
Hi, this is Lynn. I said that the primary care associations are one vehicle that we are considering as part of delivery of technical assistance. We have not decided, we have not confirmed that. That is something that we're looking at.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, your next question comes from the line of Rachel Kucher. Your line is now open.
Hi. We are also looking at applications for the Pioneer ACO and the community-based care transition. And we're just wondering if either of these are mutually exclusive with the FQHC advanced primary care practice, or if we're able to apply, you know, for both or all three.
CMS is currently working on the policy related to a decision in that regard. So at this time, we're not able to answer that question. I would recommend that you go back and send it to us in the mailbox, and when we have a decision, we can get back to you.
Okay. Do you have an estimate as to when, just because we've got, you know, deadlines for all of these, do you have an estimate as to when that decision will be made?
Not until the early fall.
So we need to go ahead and do applications because the deadlines all fall before early fall.
Yes, if you're interested in participating in this particular demonstration, I would encourage you to apply.
Okay. So we'll, if we're accepted for multiple demonstrations, and they're supposed to begin, you know, September 1st for this one, what does that mean for that determination being made at a later date?
It means that CMS would get back to you about the ultimate determination of whether you're eligible to participate in the demonstration. I can only comment on the FQHC Advanced Primary Care Practice demonstration, not the other ones.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Mm-hmm. Your next question comes from the line of Megan Lasher. Your line is now open.
Hi, this is Dave Sotok. Thanks. Our question was answered in terms of the NCQA 2008 certification that we're level 3 now, so I understand that. I would just like to concur with the gentleman that spoke a couple minutes ago about meshing and figuring out the multiple site issue.
This is Lynn Riley. At this point, we're requiring all of the FQHC applicant sites to achieve the NCQA Level 3 medical home recognition. We have not changed the policy. At this point, we are going forward with our goal to have every site recognized as Level 3 medical home. However, we hear you, and we appreciate your feedback. And so we'll take that back to our leadership for discussions. And if CMS does change policy on that, we would certainly let the selected FQHCs know about it.
Thank you.
Your next question comes from the line of Mary Bartolo. Your line is now open.
Hi, I think there's a lot of FQHCs that are accredited by JACO, and JACO's in the process of becoming certified or in a certification medical home. Is that going to be something that's considered in the future, or people have to be NCQA accredited in this process?
In this demonstration, FQHCs that are selected to participate must be NCQA recognized as a Level 3 medical home.
Okay. And so we have to make the determination if we want to do both or switch.
Correct.
All right. Thank you.
I think I'll expand. You know, Matt Burke from HRSA talked about the multiple benefits of participating in this demonstration. And so I'd like to take an opportunity to reiterate that there are multiple benefits. And I think, you know, I would hope that you all would take those into consideration as you think about applying.
I could also add a little bit of background. When we were designing this demonstration, which, believe me, didn't start 6 months ago, I don't believe that JACO actually had an accreditation program up and running at that point. For our purposes, we had to choose, and we had to use a single standard because this is a research project, something that we could point to, something that was widely available and widely acceptable. We support JACO, AAA, HC, URAC, and others in that they have accreditation, that they have processes for identifying medical homes and certifying that they have capability. But for our purposes, many of these things were not online prior to our coming to this or were not widely used. So for comparative purposes, it seemed logical from a research point of view to use NCQA, now that others are coming online, it's obvious that these questions do come to mind, and I think that they're very good questions and worth considering. But our demonstration is designed at this point, and we're going to stick to the way that we have it for the time being.
Okay, next question comes from the line of Jennifer Granger. Your line is now open.
Hi. I was wondering for FQHCs who have been accepted to participate in the Bureau of Primary Health Care's patient-centered medical health home program where they're going to pay the fee for the NCQA survey as well. How is that going to be coordinated? Because I understand CMS is also going to pay for that fee. So if centers were in both programs, how would that work?
Hi, this is Barbara Easterling from the Bureau of Primary Health Care. I'm the program manager for the NCQA Patient-Centered Medical Home Initiative. You can participate in both projects, and your survey fees will be covered.
Okay, so it'll happen behind the scenes, and the health centers won't need to.
You won't have to worry about that.
Worry about it. Okay, very good. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Your next question comes from the line of Mike Hassing. Your line is now open.
Thank you. My question's been answered.
Okay, your next question comes from the line of Gail Hedler. Your line is now open. Gail Hedler, your line is now open.
We can move on, Melinda.
Okay, your next question comes from line of Thomas Woodworth. Your line is now open.
Hi, I have a couple questions, and I know we've gone around this a couple times. We have about 9 provider numbers for our different locations with a couple more applications on the bill. However, within about the past year, instead of us billing for all of our locations under the individual provider numbers, we've only been we were instructed to only bill under the one number, and that's how we get paid, and that's how it's reflected on the PSNRs. So in light of that, are all of our locations considered one FQHC, or, again, do I have to apply for each of the different sites individually?
If you've been submitting claims under one number for all of your sites, in other words, rolling up the claims, there's actually two issues here. Most of your sites would not be recognized as eligible because we would not show claims for 200 or more Medicare beneficiaries. And secondly, I think that it's inappropriate. I guess that's a good word. You're supposed to be billing under each individual PTAN number for services provided to Medicare beneficiaries at each individual site. But this is not my area of expertise, and I can't speak to it. So I guess
I'll check with my billing manager because previously that's how we were doing it, but we were instructed to do it under the one number. But I'm going to find out exactly who gave us that instruction.
Yeah, why don't you do that? And if you find that there's some questions, you can forward them to our mailbox.
Okay.
Or talk to your project officer at HRSA, right, Barbara?
Yes.
Yeah, I think it would be a good idea for you to get in touch with your project officer at HRSA about this specific issue and then follow up with an email to our email box.
Okay. And the email box again is
FQHC_MH_
okay,
demo at cms.hhs.gov.
Okay. Then, now, if we apply for 3 of our sites and they all get chosen. Within the next year, hopefully the next 12 months, we're going to have a new building completed in which we're going to combine two of those sites into one. Will that present a problem?
Would you mind sending that question to us to our mailbox so we can consider it? It sounds like kind of a unique problem that we'd like to discuss with you offline.
Okay. Sounds good. Thanks.
Okay, your next question comes from the line of Marcia Carlisle. Your line is now open.
Thank you. My question has been answered.
Okay, and the next question comes from the line of Kay Binns. Your line is now open.
Thank you. My name is Pauline Heslop from Covenant House. You may have already answered this question, but please affirm for us. We are an FQHC, but most of our clients are primarily Medicaid enrollees. Would that automatically exclude us from this demonstration project?
If you do not meet the minimum eligibility requirement, yes, it would. Your Medicaid recipients would have to be dual eligibles, and you would have to have a minimum of 200 that you provided primary health care services to in the previous 12-month period that we look back.
Okay, I guess that really excludes us because they don't have Medicare, they just have Medicaid.
Okay, I'm sorry, this is a Medicare demonstration.
Yes, thanks.
Hey, your next question comes from line of Sessa Riley. Your line is now open.
Hi. Thank you for all your information. I've really enjoyed this. I just have a question. Once the decision's been made of the 500 or so sites, within the next 3 years, then are there going to be, like, learning sessions, conference calls, listservs to where we help each other out, or are we working individually by ourselves alone?
Our intention is that you will likely be working mostly independently, but we are in the process of trying to develop some learning systems that might involve some peer-to-peer learning. We have no immediate details on that, so I can't really comment on, to any great length on it.
Okay, thank you.
Your next question comes from the line of Mary Agnes Gilman. Your line is now open.
Hi, my question was previously answered by Barbara Easterling. Thank you.
Okay, our next question comes from the line of Dinah Moyer. Your line is now open.
Yes, hi. We have one permanent nurse practitioner and we're recruiting for another provider. So how would that affect the application process if we don't have someone in place by August 12th?
You would have to have clinic leadership or a nurse practitioner or physician-led FQHC. They'd have to be on board at the time of your application.
Okay.
Okay, next question comes from line of Carla Bartlaw. Your line is now open.
Thank you. And just forgive me, I missed out on the first part of this. I just want to clarify something. We are currently participating in meaningful use. Where does that come into play here? And for some reason I had it in mind we couldn't do both. We had to do one or the other.
My understanding is you can do both. Meaningful use is actually something quite different. Recognition as a patient-centered medical home does not require electronic health record. It's probably easier and better for you to have one at level 3, but it's not a requirement that one exists. So meaningful use and going in that direction only applies to your obtaining or being reimbursed for clinicians, physicians who are in the process of using or learning how to use electronic health records. I don't see that as being a conflict to participate in this demonstration.
Thank you.
And this is Bill Tullock from NCQA. If I could just add, we've actually embedded a lot of the HIT meaningful use requirements into the 2011 standard. So, in fact, there's actually some overlap that may benefit you.
And your next question comes from line of George Ward. Your line is now open.
Hi. I'm on the website, and I'm looking at the page dealing with joint principles of the patient-centered medical home, and I'm on the section that talks about payment. Just a quick clarification here. One of the bullet points says that it should pay for services associated with coordination of care, both within a given practice and between consultants, ancillary providers, and community resources. So if I, for example, am a patient of Dr. Berwick's, and he sends me to the hospital for some type of specialty care that is not typically covered by Medicare or Medi-Cal, is this saying that the FQHC clinic would have to pay for that specialty care?
No, I don't think that's what it's saying. You're talking about the principles of a patient-centered medical medical home as described or ratified by the American College of Physicians, the American Academy of Family Practitioners, et cetera?
Yeah, that one, where it talks about payment down at the bottom.
Right, those are seven principles that have been jointly agreed upon by medical professional organizations. They should not be considered explicit for the purposes of this demonstration.
Oh, okay. All right. Thank you. I just wanted to be sure about that.
All right.
Thanks a lot.
Okay, your next question comes from line of Tina Hahn. Your line is now open.
This is a question around requirements. Once you achieve level 3 recognition, do you still need to complete the readiness assessments every 6 months, or do you stop doing that once you've achieved the recognition?
Now, we would expect you to continue to do that. Basically, a lot of participating FQHCs are going to need almost all of that time for recognition. Those that are a little further ahead, obviously, if you've already gotten recognized, this is going to seem like a tedious process. But I want you to recognize, too, that the readiness assessment that is updated every 6 months, you're only changing the answers that have changed. So if you're doing your updated readiness assessment after 6 months and you're already recognized and nothing has changed, you're actually not changing anything on the readiness assessment, so you're kind of resubmitting it. But because we're doing research on this, we have to see the results from each participant so we can see how the progress is changing or how the FQHCs are changing, even if they don't need to change.
Well, and part of what we're looking at in the evaluation is the transformational process, and the purpose in asking you to fill out the survey every 6 months is so we can look at how you're progressing in transforming into a medical home practice. So even once you achieve level 3 recognition, I think the medical home model, the idea is that you wouldn't necessarily stop everything simply because you achieved level 3 recognition, but that it would be kind of an ongoing, continual process.
Okay, thanks. And then one other quick question. Actually, no, I'm sorry. That's been answered. Thank you.
Your next question comes from line of John Stroob. Your line is now open.
I just want to make sure I understand. You indicated there's no cost for the survey. If you're accepted into the demonstration project, the survey cost of NCQA will be offset?
Yes, that's correct.
But it's like we're a multi-site FQHC. We have seven medical sites spread across three counties. And I think each of our sites would qualify, but we'd have to have essentially seven applications to participate.
For the sake of the demonstration, your readiness assessments will not have any cost. And when you ultimately submit for recognition with the documentation, those costs will be covered by our friends at HRSA.
Great. They already do that for our joint commission stuff, so that's very helpful.
Your Our next question comes from the line of Cindy Stewart. Your line is now open.
Yes, I may have missed this information, but what I wanted to find out is CMS going to provide a roster of the identified patients at the beginning of this demonstration project for the individual clinics as a starting point? I heard the discussion of a roster being provided with payment after the first quarter.
The payment is prospective, so you will at the beginning of the demonstration get a roster and a payment for the quarter prospectively. So I think the answer is yes to your question.
Okay, thank you.
Again, if you'd like to ask a question, that's star 1 on your telephone keypad. Our next question comes from the line of Elizabeth Gillespie. Your line is now open.
Hi, this is Paul Kay again. Back to the multi-site, the technical application question. The more I understand the process, it's clearer to me. But I would ask, I think most of us who have multiple sites in our organization will want to apply for those sites that are not part of this demonstration using the same process because we're trying to improve our entire organization. So, again, I would urge you to work with NCQA from the technical side to let us use their multi-site system of documentation and proof, even though we will site by site apply to the CMS demo, because I think in reality we'll be working on all of our sites whether they're part of the demo or not. So it would be very helpful to coordinate those two, and I think it would not in any way violate the spirit or the research that you need to do.
We appreciate your feedback.
Thanks.
Our next question comes from line of Gail Hedler. Your line is now open.
Perhaps she's on mute. This is the second call for Gail.
Gail Hedler, your line is now open.
We can move on, Melinda.
Okay, and I do actually have a couple lines that we haven't gotten to transcribe yet. If you want, I can open the lines and have them state their name for you.
Okay.
Okay. So the next question comes from a line whose information I did not collect yet. Could you please state your name? Your line is now open.
This is Marnie Holder. Hello, and thank you. I'd like to ask about, as a multi-site grantee, as we counsel our boards, I think it's my understanding if we have 4 sites invited to participate. When we hit that button on all those applications, if CMS accepts 1 site into the demonstration, we've agreed to participate with just 1 site. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Thank you.
Okay, our next question comes from the line of Mary Erb. Your line is now open.
Hi. So we're on, or we're doing the 2008 standards. We have not been recognized as a level 3 medical home, and we were wondering if we were still eligible for the CMS demo.
If you meet the eligibility requirements, yes, you are, but you'd have to meet the standards for the 2011 NCQA recognition at this point within the demonstration. But if I understood you correctly, you were working on 2008 standards but actually have not submitted for recognition. Is that correct?
Yes.
Then you can apply to participate in the demonstration as long as you meet the other eligibility requirements.
Okay. And I have another question. It has to do with the year of reporting. Our accountant wanted to know, did you mean the fiscal year, or it said look back year? What does that entail?
We chose a 12-month period for which we had the most complete data available to us from our payment contractors. That happened to coincide with the calendar year of 2010. So we looked back for all eligible FQHCs for a period of January through December of 2010. And during that period of time, there needed to be at least 200 Medicare beneficiaries that were served at the site at least once in that period of time.
So it's just the calendar year, it's not the fiscal year?
Yeah, in this particular case, yes. But our 12-month period is going, obviously we're going to verify eligibility on a quarterly basis. So in, well, we'll go to, in December, I guess, we will go back and revisit, and we'll look at a 12-month period that now runs from
March
the previous March through that point in December. So it's a rolling period of time that we'll be looking back. It's not a static time.
Okay, and I have one more. I'm sorry. Sometimes we only have like one Medicare patient that will come. They'll come for, so let's say, like an annual physical, but they come for other services here regularly. Would we still get money for that patient?
If they remain eligible to participate, yes, you would collect a fee for that.
What exactly entails a beneficiary? Like, how many times do they have to come? Does it have to be a certain amount of times that they visit the FQHC, or?
No, when we do our look back, we're actually looking at as few as an individual visit for that individual beneficiary in that 12-month period.
Let me just add, if another FQHC in that quarterly look back happened to see the beneficiary more often than you did, and they were also participating, that Benny would fall off your roster and be attributed to that other FQHC, which I think is answering your question a little bit. Does that
yes,
help?
It is. Okay. Yes, thank you.
Your next question comes from the line of Rhonda Twigg. Your line is now open.
Hi, thank you. I have two questions. One, what does the reimbursement schedule look like? And two, would you consider a blog site for sharing site process information?
Reimbursement schedule? I'm not sure. I'm not sure I know what you mean.
If the sites who are approved and participating, if they're being paid to be in the demonstration, what does that look like?
You will get a prospective payment that's the equivalent of $6 per member per month each quarter without having to submit any claims. It will be calculated by our payment contractor and determine how much the FQHC has earned by virtue of the number of Medicare beneficiaries that are eligible and attributed to your facility. That translates into six times whatever that number is, and it'll be paid on a quarterly basis. So I'm not sure I'm answering your question.
Let me just interject. We plan to make our first payment September 15th and then quarterly thereafter. Does that help?
Yes, thank you.
And you had another question?
Yes, the second question was, would you consider a blog site for sites to share their process information during the demonstration?
I don't think we have plans to do that. If FQHCs wanted to establish one on their own, I think that's a fine idea.
Thank you.
Okay, next question comes from the line of Assessor Riley. Your line is now open.
Hi. This is something I don't think has been discussed at all, but care managers, I know that's a huge part of patient-centered medical home. What is your recommendation? Say you have 200 Medicare patients. One care manager per 200? Do you have any thoughts or recommendations about these care managers that we need to hire?
No, actually we don't. I think the idea here is we're kind of leaving it up to the individual site to determine what their needs are and to address them. And those are the nature of the kinds of questions that you would be answering in the readiness assessment and ultimately in the recognition survey as to how you address those. You might want to take a look at the 2011 standards and see what examples or insights they give in terms of how you might meet their criteria. That might give you some better information or better clues. And there are also websites that you might consider going to, such as the American College of Physicians website, aco.org, or some of the other, well, if you Googled patient-centered medical home, you might find some other examples. I'm blanking on an exact site for you. I'm sorry.
And Jim, this is Mahila. If you go to the fqhcmedicalhome.com website, there are also references there that might help you.
Okay. Thank you.
Again, if you'd like to ask a question, that's star 1 on your telephone keypad. And our next question comes from line of Molly Ferguson. Your line is now open.
Good afternoon. Thank you very much. I'm curious if there will be an opportunity for this call to be replayed or perhaps added to the website for our colleagues that were not able to participate.
This call is being recorded and will be transferred into an MP3 file, which will be posted on the CMS and the Innovation Center website that appear on slide 34 in the not-too-distant future. I don't know how long it will take to get it up there, but the answer to your question is yes. This will be available for replay at some point.
Okay, great. Thank you very much.
Hey, our next question comes from line of Tina Hahn. Your line is now open.
I know you had said that you're still working on the TA plan, and I wondered if there are opportunities for us to give input into that, and if so, how we might do that? Or are those decisions already sort of been made but just not finalized yet?
Could you repeat that question, please?
So it's regarding the TA plan. It sounded as though there were still some decisions being made about how TA was going to be provided and by whom. And I just wondered if we had any opportunity to give our input into that decision-making process. And if so, how we would go about doing that.
Well, actually, at this point, we had not, CMS has not entertained accepting feedback about technical assistance from any of the FQHCs in the demonstration. We've been looking to our partners, NACHC and HRSA, about that, and NCQA. However, that being said, if you would like to send an email note to our email box regarding your ideas for technical assistance, please feel free to do so.
Hey, thanks.
Okay, our next question comes from line of Gail Hedler. Your line is now open.
Thank you very much. I had another conference call from 2 o'clock.
Hello?
Too much new information, really.
Okay. I have no idea. If we were, they would say shut up because we...
excuse me, we can hear you. So if you'd like to ask a question, please do so. Otherwise, please disconnect.
Melanie, let's move on.
Okay, there are no further questions in the queue.
No more questions. Okay. Thank you. I meant to say Melinda, not Melanie. Forgive me.
That's okay.
We did pretty well on time. I'll ask if there are any parting comments.
I'd just like to say thank you all for joining us today. We look forward to looking at your applications and any feedback you want to send us or questions via our email box. And feel free to look at all of the resources through the contact information that we've provided in the slide deck. And with that, we'll adjourn.
And this concludes today's conference call. You may now disconnect.